Okay, so we're here on Daf Kufei Amud Beis, right in the middle of the Daf. We're up to Tanya. I don't know how to count the number of lines from the top or the bottom, because it's, you know, you may have noticed that Kufei Amud Beis is quite a long Daf. So I don't know if there are any simonim here I could give you. The first word in the line is Shvuah. Now, by way of introduction, we're really, in a sense, moving on to another topic, but yet there's a certain great similarity between the last sugya that we learned and the sugya that Amir Tzshem we're about to learn. Alfie, you don't want to sit here?
It's a bit tight, and I want to...
Oh, here, so let me just move this table. You know, I got plenty of room here, so...
Sure.
Chaval. Just, yeah, thanks.
Some are better than others. This is
okay.
Your one.
Oh, okay. I have the original, so. So Rabosai, in the last sugya, we tried to define, if you recall, kfiras mama. And the nafkamina would be whether or not through this shvua he would be chayav a karban asham. Because a karban asham is only brought for kfiras mama. And since in any event, even after the Shavua, he has the Chametz, let's say, in his Rishus, so he's going to return the Chametz, so there's no really difference in Dini Mominus between the Shavua Sheker didn't save him anything in monetary terms, because the Chametz is worthless anyway. So the question whether a Shavua on Chametz, Shavalava Pesach, is considered a Kfiras Mamon. And we spoke about a kind of theoretical gain that... in event that this object, this gzela, this chametz, this whiskey is taken away from him, he's going to have to pay its original value, as it were, valued b'shas ha'gzela before Pesach. That theoretical loss of mamon is enough to engender, perhaps, the status of a kfiras mamon. So what we're seeing is that you may have something that's not really, strictly speaking, a kfiras mamon, but it might lead to mamon. And if something might lead to mamon, that itself upgrades it to the status of mamon. That, I think, if you could keep that concept in mind, that the theoretical possibility that X could lead to a financial loss or a financial gain, that makes it into mamon. If you keep that in mind, I think you'll see the link between yesterday's sugya and today's sugya, if you know what I mean. So let's just talk a little bit about the parsha of Shvuas HaEdus, which means that a person claims that so-and-so knows Edus for him, and that testimony, if it would be given in a Beis Din, would gain money for him. And he demands of that person who knows the Edus to come forward and testify on his behalf. And the person refuses. He says, I don't know anything. I can't testify on your behalf. And at that point, he takes a shvua that he has no testimony. Now, there's an entire perek in Shas, in the fourth perek in Shvuas, that's dedicated to this topic of Shvuas HaEdus. And there are many different, obviously different halachas, different dimensions to that parasha. For example, even if the so-called aid refuses to take the shvua, it's possible that the tovea could impose the shvua on him. He could, what's called, be mashbia him. And once he's mashbia him, he compels the shvua on top of the aid. In any event, the aid took a shvua that he has no edus, and as a result of the shvua, gee, there was a much better copy. I don't know where it got lost. That's funny. Okay, doesn't matter. No. Yeah, this was the one I wanted you to photocopy. Okay.
Yeah. Come out well.
Yeah, no, because this I made two copies when I realized that the first one didn't come out, you know. So I made a second copy where it did come out. Okay, it doesn't matter. In any event, when the person who took the shvua finally confesses that he had edus to give on behalf of the tovea, and that edus would have been meaningful for the tovea to gain money, and he took a false oath, once he admits to that effect, he has to bring a karban asham. And that karban is brought as a punishment for the shvua sheker in the case of edus. And the pasuk reads the following. This is in Vayikra Hei, pasuk Pasuk Aleph, it says, "V'nefesh ki sechta v'shama kol Allah." A person sinned by hearing an Allah. Allah is a shvua. In other words, in this case, the Toveah imposed the shvua on the nitba, which means the aid. V'hu aid. Im lo yagid v'nosa vono v'hemias hashomo l'ashem al chatosu asher chata. So he took a shvua that he has no aidus. Now he confesses that he had aidus. He's got to bring a shvua's korban. That's called a korban asher. Tanya, Omar ben Azai, Shalosh Shvuos Hain. Okay, now we're talking about the case of Hashavas Aveda. Supposing a person loses an object and he's trying to locate the finder. He hasn't been successful in doing so, but he has reason to believe that so and so has Edus. And if that testimony would be given, he'd be able to locate the finder. There's no guarantee that the finder will admit and confess and return the object, but at least there's a good chance that he will. And Ben Azai wants to tell us that even if the aid, and we'll see soon whether it's one aid or two aid, but even if the aid would not be able to testify that so-and-so found your object and is holding on to it, which would be a complete edus, even if he knows only part of the information, he has pieces of information that maybe we could piece together and form a whole, that too is sufficient to engender a shvuas karban. And let's go through the three cases. The first case is Hikir ba velo bimotza. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says Sharo sama leches b'shus acheres. So any yodeh mihu. So the testimony that he has is that this animal that belongs to the Tovea roamed into so and so's chatzer. Just I don't know who that so and so is. So I can't actually put all the pieces together, but if my testimony were offered in Bezdin, were presented in Bezdin, I could tell you that's where your animal is. If you could find out who's the owner of that chutzah, of that yard, then you could take him to Bezdin and see if you can successfully get your cow back. I don't know who he is, I can't identify him, but I can tell you I can identify your cow. That's your cow, I saw it roam into so-and-so's backyard. So that's called Hikir Ba. Ba is a reference to the Aveda. Velo Bimotza, he didn't know who actually found it. That's case number one. Case number two is Bimotza Velo Ba. In other words, he could tell you that so-and-so found a lost object. I don't know if that's your lost object. He found a cow. Is it your cow or not? I don't know. I know you're running around looking for your lost object. I know that so-and-so found a lost object. Maybe he found your lost object. Why don't you take him to Bezdin? So that would have been the testimony had he only offered that testimony. And then the third case, which is the most problematic case, this really defies comprehension. He says, lo ba velo b'motzo. The Gemara right away is going to jump on that, but it sounds literally that Ben Azai is saying that even if this aid cannot testify neither about the object that was lost nor about the person who found the object, nevertheless, he has some aidus that he should have given. But we're going to take up the third case in just a second. But for now, what is Ben Azai telling me? That even though the aidus that this witness had was not a complete aidus, but it would be helpful for the Tovea, who lost his object, if he had that edus, and this aid refused to testify, he took a shvua to the effect that he doesn't have edus, says Ben Azai, he has to bring a carbon shvuas edus. So obviously what Ben Azai is doing for us is he's expanding the definition of mamon. And he's saying that there is some sort of theoretical possibility that the edus, had it been presented to Bezdin, would have offered a gain of mamon on behalf of the Tovea. It's all theoretical, because it could very well be possible that even after he testifies, and he only knows part of the Eidus, he doesn't know the whole story, he can identify the object but not the finder, he can identify the finder but not the object, nevertheless, he could possibly be a stepping stone for the Tovea to get back his object. Because at least the Tovea will know where his object is located, or at least he'll know who found the lost object. Maybe, just maybe, that person found his lost object. He'll be able to pursue this case, hopefully to its successful fruition, and get back his lost object. That possibility is enough to call it mammon. And again, Rabbi will say, here you see the similarity to the previous sugya that we learned, the last sugya, namely that the theoretical possibility that this chametz might get lost, if it's stolen or it goes up in smoke, I would therefore have to pay the value of this chametz as it were valued before Pesach. That theoretical possibility is enough to call something mammon. Here too, if the aid has to be denying aidus of mammon, well, this could have been possibly aidus of mammon, because maybe, although it's only pieces of a puzzle, but it might be sufficient for the tovea to eventually get back his object. Now, the third case, where the aid doesn't know neither ba nor bemotza, what is that all about? So Gemara right away jumps on that. Lo ba velo bemotza is kushta eshtava. When he said, I don't know aidus for you, he really took a shvuas emes. Kushta means emes, not false oath, but rather a true oath. Because he really has no aidus for him. He doesn't recognize the object. He doesn't recognize its finder. He knows nothing. So the Gemara says, Ema, you have to change the girsa in the Brisa of Ben Azai, and it should read as follows: Ba ubimotza. He knows both about the object, and he can identify the finder of the object, which basically means that Ben Azai is not being mechadish anything in this third case, because obviously that Eidus would have been a full-fledged, perfect Eidus based upon which the Tovea would have been able to get back his mamon. And therefore, the Shavuos Eidus is Mechayev Karban, is a Mechayev Karban Hashem Shavuos Eidus. So why did Ben Azai bother adding this third case? Perhaps you could say the following. If let's say Eidim know that Reuven stole something from Shimon, then there's no question that if they gave the Eidus in court, then Shimon would have the wherewithal, based on this Eidus, to retrieve his object from the Gazlan. In the case of Aveda, it's a lot more complicated. Why? Because a Shomer Aveda, and this is the sugya in the sixth parak of Bava Kama, is either a Shomer Chinom or a Shomer Sachar. But either way, it's Machlokas Rav and Rav Yosef, he's definitely part of Onsim. So that even if the Eidim will testify that this Yankel Beryl is holding on to your cow because he found it, so I identify, the Eidim identify both the object and the finder. Nevertheless, if the finder claims in Beis Din that some onus happened and lightning struck the cow dead, he, the finder, would be potter. Because even if you grant him the status of a Shomer Sachar, according to Rav Yosef, nevertheless he's potter from onset. So there's no absolute guarantee that this Eidus, even had it been presented to Beis Din, would allow the Tovea to collect his money and get back. So there's a chiddush here, even in the last case of Ben Azai, meaning Aveda itself is a chiddush. Why? Because I might have argued that Aveda is not really an Eidus Mammon, because it doesn't really clinch, it doesn't guarantee that the Tovea will get his Mammon back. There's always an element of suffix involved. Will the Motzi admit that here's your object, I'm returning it to you? Will the Motzi admit that it was lost by due to my negligence, or so forth? So there are possibilities that the Motzi, even when we locate him and we have him in front of us in Beis Din, will not have to pay for the Aveda. So that's also an additional category of a chiddush here in Ben Azai. Okay.
So, this is not germane, you just say so, but when you look at the flow of this Gemara, right, it says, here's a Braisa, and this is and obviously there was a Masorah for this Braisa, and they said, but the last entry doesn't make any sense, so therefore, okay, it must have been something different.
Right.
Doesn't that disturb you a little bit, that they had the Besorah, that the Braisa had one language?
Well, all of a sudden the Gemara, if it was a Mishnah, I'd be very nervous about it. And then you have something called Chisuri Mechsura, but you don't usually have a different Girsa in a Mishnah. In the case of a Braisa, all of Shas is full of a concept called Mishubeshta. Have you ever heard of that? Where the Gemara argues that you're quoting a Braisa, the Braisa has a logical contradiction, and we have to throw it out. In other words, when Rebbe left it out, omitted it from the Mishnah, he did so deliberately because he felt that it wasn't a correct version of a Machlokas Tanoim or whatever it might be. So the Braisa itself, every Braisa is sort of like guilty until proven innocent. You know, there are so many mistakes in Braisos, and that's why they were, you know, we needed Rebbe to edit the Mishnah, but, you know, he left out the Braisa because he felt either the Braisa wasn't so significant or he felt the Braisa was unreliable. In this case, the Gemara says if the Eidim don't identify, cannot identify neither the object nor its finder, then there's nothing to talk about.
It's,
you know, he has
it's
no way.
Not a subtle error.
Correct. Opinion. Yeah, it's such an obvious blatant error. It must be that we have to change the word lo, and if we take out the two lo's, what we're left with is ba ubemotza. Some scribe, you know, got confused. Maybe he was a little bit intoxicated, and he added two lows here. But just drop those two lows. Fine. Okay. Now the Gemara raises the following question: Lamai Hilchasa. The Gemara says, "What did Ben Azai mean? He's got this list of three cases of edus on an aveda." And he hasn't really, in this braisa, spelled out, well, what's the din in these three cases? Whatever the din is, it's going to be common for all three cases. It's enumerated on a list, and it's one unit. So the Gemara says, L'mai Hilchasa, what did Ben Azai have in mind here? Did he have in mind here that in these three cases the aid is chayav a shvua, or in these three cases the aid is potter from a shvua? And that's a machlokes between Rav Ami and Shmuel. Rav Ami Omar, Rabbi Chanina, the name Rav Chanina, Liftar. What he meant to say is that in all three cases, this is not considered Shvuas, this is not an Eidus Mamon, and therefore there's no Shvuas Eidus, there's no Chiyuv Karban Oshem. Shmuel Omar Lechiyuv. Shmuel said that Ben Azai meant to tell you that in all these three cases, there is a Chiyuv. Now, let's just take a minute and try to understand these two opinions. The first opinion, Liftar, says, look, you know what? We're talking about one witness. And in the case of one witness, then one witness is never believed to establish mamon. At the best, what can we hope from the testimony of one aid? The Torah says, Al pi shnayim aidim yakum dover. A shvua, correct. And the aid is only machayev a shvua, he's not machayev mama. So if that be the case, then by definition, aid echad is not machayev a shvua's karma. And if you take that opinion of Rav Ami and Rav Chanina, then it makes sense that Ben Azai had to culminate his presentation with the third case, where the aid knows everything. He can identify both the object and its finder. And nevertheless, he's not chayev a shvua's karma, because the thrust of his eidus, the power of his eidus, is only l'chayiv shvua, but not l'chayiv mamon, and therefore his eidus is not eidus mamon. Shmuel, on the other hand, holds that, you know what? The possibility exists that after his eidus, the nitba, in this case the finder, will not have the gumption to deny the testimony of the eid, to contradict the eid, and take a shvua to that effect. Now, what happens if a person, by virtue of an Eid Echad who's testifying against him, backs down and refuses to take the Shmua?
He needs to pay.
What's that called? Mitok. Yeah, Mitok Sheni Yochel Shova Meshalim. Or in this case, Mitok Sheni Rotzel Yishova Meshalim. So therefore, Shmuel is of the opinion that really, there is a possibility, a very distinct possibility, that the aid, had he come to give his aid, this would have been mechayev the nitba mamon, because the nitba backs off from the shvua, and that's really why the Torah instituted the shvua, so the institution was successful, and the nitba backs down, in such case he has to pay. He has two choices: either take the shvua to be makish the aid, or pay out of pocket. And since there's a very good chance that the nitba will back off from the shvua and therefore pay, that aidus was critical for the tovea, and we could define it as moma. I would like to go perhaps a step further and suggest the following. It's just a suggestion that perhaps the machlokas here between Rav Ami on the one hand and Shmuel on the other hand touches on a much more fundamental question. What is the power, what is the halachic essence of edus of an eid echad in dini mamonos? I want to suggest two possibilities. One possibility is to say that, you know, he adds, the aid and his testimony adds a little bit of strength and support for the claim of the plaintiff, of the tovea, such that now we have a real suffix, and we don't know whether to believe the counterclaim of the defendant of the nitba, and so the nitba needs a little bit of extra support because the tovea has this extra support by being supported by an eid echad. And for that we need a shvua. But basically, the Eid Echad is not believed to establish the mamon. He just gives a little bit of extra support to the taina of the tovea. That makes the taina into a taina chashuva, similar to Modim Miksas, which is a taina chashuva, and therefore the nitba has to take a shvua. Or, no. In truth, the Torah would believe 1-8. What the Torah is mechadesh is a schus hakchasha b'shvua. The Torah granted a right to the nitba to utilize a shvua to be machish the eid. The shvua itself has the weight of evidence equal to that of the eid, which basically neutralizes the aid. It's similar to, if you're familiar with the phrase, if the phraseology of treu trei, it becomes like a stalemate. And in the absence of any solid evidence to tip the scale, we leave the money exactly where it is. In other words, the nitba will win this case and it'll be exonerated from any payments because his shvua counters the aid. And once he counters the aid, then the Torah says, you know, we're in a stalemate situation. We don't know what to do. And if we don't know what to do, we can't force the nitba to cough up the money. So according to the first definition, what we're saying is that the shvua, that the eid echad is only believed in order to be mechayev a shvua. He adds a little strength to the taina of the tovea. According to the second pshat is, the aid is really believed on the moment itself. As a result of his eidus, Bezdin believes that the nitba is chayev to pay the tovea. But the Torah is mechadish in the case of an eid echad, the power of a shvua to be machish the eid echad and neutralize it. And the nafkamina is going to be in this case where the aid refuses to come forward and give his testimony, and he takes a shvua to the effect that he has no testimony. Is that called eidus mamon? If I go with the first definition, he was never believed from the get-go on mamon. He's only believed to be mechayev shvua. That's the whole thrust of what is, according to the second approach, which I think personally is much more enticing, is much more attractive. He's really believed on the moment itself. Just the Torah was mechadish, as we said before, the nitba could be machish and shvua. The Torah was mechadish, a new right that it gave into the hands of the nitba, that he could be machish the aid with the shvua. But the difference is going to be that, obviously, if the nitba is not able or not willing to exercise his rights and pump out a shvua here to neutralize the aid, we're left with the aid. Because the aid from the get-go was an aid on mamon. And he was believed on the mamon. Just the Torah says that the credibility of a shvua is equal to that of an aid. But as far as the gufo shel eidus shel ha'eid is concerned, if you want to define its essence, that is a nemonis on mamon. What the Torah's machadish is that two eidim have such a great power that even a shvua could not be machish, cannot put a dent in the credibility of two eidim. Whereas in the case of one eid, even though he's an eid mamon, he would be subject or vulnerable to a hakhash of a shvu. I'll give you another nafkamin. Not only in the case where the nitba refuses to take the shvuah, but what about the case where the eid echad becomes an eid zomim? Let's say, for example, two eidim come in and they say to the eid, well, how could you have seen Reuven borrow 1,000 from Shimon? You were with us on that day in a different place. Would the halacha of yasisim lo kasha zomim lasos liechav apply over here? And it would depend. If the nemonis of the eid is only as far as shvu is concerned, so maybe we'll give malchus or something. I don't know. It's like Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, if you're familiar with the first mission of malchus. But it's certainly not eidus mamon. If, on the other hand, we believe the eid as far as mamon is concerned, that's a full fledged kasha zomam on eidus mamon, and therefore kasha zomam should apply in the literal sense that he should be paying for it. The Gemara offers, however, a different explanation. And I'm not sure if my explanation could fit into the Gemara. I don't think so. But the Gemara says the following. Ubiplukta dahani tanoi. That this machlokes between Rav Ami on the one hand and Rav Chanina and Shmuel on the other hand is an ancient machlokes. Where do we find it? In the Tanoi. So this is the famous sugya called Davar Hagorem Lemoma. Disanya Hamashbia Eid Echad Potur. According to the Tanakhama, if you are Mashbia Eid Echad, come and give me Eidus, and he denies that he took the Eidus, he takes the Shvua that he didn't have Eidus for them, he's Potur, and that would reflect the Shita here of Rav Ami Rav Chanina. But Rabbi Elezer Rav Shimon Mechayev, he says that this is a Dover Agorim Lamamon, and it's Kimamon Tommy. Why? Because the Eid Echad, insofar as he may, at the end of the day, be the instrument, the tool, to achieve the goal of having the Nitba pay up, because the Nitba doesn't want to take the Shavua. In that case, says Rabbi Elazar, that makes it into a Mamon situation. And we can upgrade it into Mamon. Why? Because it's a Gorem Lamamon. Gorem Lamamon means there's a theoretical possibility that as a result of this aid and his testimony, the Nitba will have to cough up the money. Why? Because he refuses to take a Shvu. But Maikom Miflegli, says the Gemara, this Machlok Shin, the Tanakam, Rav Shimon Elazar, Mar Sovar, according to Rav Shimon, is Dovar Hagorem Lamamon. Kimamon Domi, Umar Sovar, and the Tanakama, and again after the Tanakama Rav Chanina, is Dovar Agorim Lamamon, Lav Kimamon Domi. Okay. Now, what I would like to study with you, if you happen to be inclined to want to read together with me, are two footnotes here on this Gemara called Yutes and Chaf. I don't know if you have that. But before that, because I couldn't do the photocopying to its ultimate, so to speak, I want to point out a footnote here on the previous page. So for this it'll be Torah Shebal Peh, and that's footnote number Tet Zayin. And in that footnote, he quotes a machlokes between Rashi on the one hand and Tosus HaRosh on the other hand. Rashi, which is the way we presented the sugya, understands that the machlokes between Rav Ami and Rav Chanina on the one hand and Shmuel on the other hand is relevant to all three cases in Ben Azai. That's how we understood it, and that's how Rashi understands it. The Tosus HaRosh, on the other hand, is of the opinion that only that when Shmuel says that the Eid Echad is Chayav a Karban Shvuah, he's only referring to the very last of the three cases, which, if you remember, in the updated version of the Braisa means Hikar Ba Ubimotza. Only then, where the Eid has a full-fledged testimony, a complete testimony, with regard to this Aveda, he knows. He can identify the person who found the Aveda and the Aveda itself. Only in that case does Shmuel say that as a result of denying this Eidus and now after the Shavuos Sheker confessing, then he's chayev the Shavuos Korban Eidus. But in the first two cases, even Shmuel would have to agree that there's no Dovra Goreim L'Mamon K'Mamon Dami. Says the Tosa Rosh, very interesting language here. This is called, the first two cases of Ben Azai, Goreim de Goreim. Because, after all, the aid is not capable, even had he offered very, you know, magnanimously his aid, he's not capable of giving us a full-fledged picture. You know, he doesn't really afford the ma'aved, you know, the one who lost the object, with the information that he needs.
That could be shame.
Craig, it could be that, you know, if we do a number of detective steps over here, we might at the end of the day be able to locate the person and the object. And then after that we have another go-in, because who says the person is going to return the object or pay its value? He may claim onus. That's already a go-in legorin. In other words, the machlokes, according to Tosa Rosh, between these amoraim, which really, according to Gemara, is a machlokes tanoim, revolves around a case where the eid echad has a full eidus, it's complete, just he's lacking another buddy, he doesn't have a colleague, a second aid, and therefore the nitba will be able to be makash him with a shvur. That's where we have a plukta as to whether or not it's a dovra gorim l'mamon k'mamon dami. But if the eid echad has two strikes against him, not only is he an eid echad, which means that the nitba could be machashim, he hasn't even given us an eidus shlemo gemura. Maybe we'll be able to figure it out through all sorts of steps of detective work. That case, Shmuel would be moder that this would not engender a chi of carbon shvuas ha'edus, because it's a dovar ha'goreim de goreim. Now, I'll tell you what I find difficult in this Tosa Rosh, just on a technical basis. We had three cases in Ben Azai, and Shmuel is telling us that in one of those three cases, according to Tosa Rosh, the third of the three, Ben Azai is telling us that you're chayev, and you bring, and then the eight, now when he confesses that he had eidus, he has to bring a carbon, mm-hmm. a carbon shvuas eidus. But what bothers me is that now we take Ben Azai and we sort of slice him into pieces. You know, it's not that Ben Azai, the whole sugya was based on the following Lamai Hilchasa. Did Ben Azai mean to say Chayav, or did he mean to say Potter? But the premise of the Gemara was that in all three cases he was giving us the same din. You know, if Ben Azai was telling us, well, in these two cases you're Potter, the eid is Potter, in this third case the eid is Chayav, the way the Tosa Rosh understands Shmuel, then it's really problematic. I don't know how to read in any sensible way the words of Ben Azai. Rashi, I think, has the upper hand over here, because Rashi is telling us that according to one opinion in the Gemara, and we'll identify that as Rabbi Chanina, in all three cases Ben Azai is saying he's Potter from a Shmuel, because at the end of the day he's an Eid Echad and only an Eid Echad. On the other hand, Shmuel is saying in Ben Azai that in all three cases he's Chayav a Shvua, because it's a Goreim, and it's enough of a Goreim that it's reasonable to assume that perhaps in this theoretical world the Tovea through that Eidus would have been able to retrieve his Mamon. But now, according to Tosis Rush, it becomes a kind of choppy endeavor here. You know, you have to really separate Ben Azai and weed it all out. You know, in two out of three cases, for sure, it's Potter.
Not only that, how would the Tosfos of Rashi understand Rabbi Chanina if it's only talking about the third case? Why would you Potter from a Shua? If the guy knows, he knows who took it, he knows.
No, only because the Nitva here could take a Shua.
Yeah.
And if the Nitva claims that it was the animal died by virtue of a lightning strikes, then he doesn't have to pay, so the Tovei cannot retrieve his
mom. You don't know that. When this guy is called to base, then...
So again, let me reiterate what I spent 15 minutes on. I guess I didn't... I wasn't clear. What I'm saying is that an Eid Echad is not considered Eidus Mamon. He's only Eidus Shvuah. And therefore, that's not called a Shavuos Karban. A Shavuos Karban is only Eidus Mammon. So if you have two Eidim who deny the Eidus, that's called Eidus Mammon. But one Eid is not called Eidus Mammon. The Torah only gave credibility to one Eid to be Chayav Shavua. Comes along Shmuel, and he says, wait a minute, but it's a Gorem. You got to admit that maybe the guy won't take a Shavua. That alone is enough to make it into Eidus Mammon. So the machlokas here becomes very similar to what we discussed in the last year about a theoretical value of mammon if such and such takes place. Meaning, if I can guess that down the line the nitba will not take the shvua to be machlokas de'echad and therefore he'll have to pay, then it became a shvuas mammon. But I don't know that that's going to be. In a sense, the power of the eid is only a gorim. You know, maybe he'll set up a chain reaction that ultimately will allow the tovea to retrieve his object. That's only a gorim. And the question is whether a gorim is enough to upgrade the status of the eidus to a shvuas mammon. Okay, Rabbi Osei. Now, I want to learn with you footnotes number yutes and number chaf. We have here in footnote number Yutes a gigantic chiddush of the Ramban. The Ramban refers us to a sugya on Daf Tzariches Amid Beis, which is really the prime sugya of Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim of Dovar Hagorem Lemamon, whether it's Kimamon Domi or not, in terms of Mazik and Nizak. A person was Magdish, an animal. The animal now belongs to Hegdesh. It no longer belongs to the owner, the original owner. And now someone comes along and destroys the animal. Does he have to pay the original owner? So the Pashtus would be, and that's the Shitas Chachamim, that he doesn't have to pay the owner. The owner can't claim damages because he no longer owns it. The very moment he was Magdish, he transferred ownership over to Hegdesh. Comes along Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and he says, Dovar Agorim Lamamon Kimamon Tami. Since this individual took a neder that he has to bring a behemah as a karmon, if he doesn't have this animal, he's going to have to bring a replacement animal, and that's going to cost him big bucks. Therefore, this animal, even though technically it's not his, it's kimamon tami. It's considered as if he owns the animal because that animal represents for him the mammon that he's going to have to pay to fulfill his neder, because if he doesn't get it with this animal, he's going to have to replace it with another animal. We would have assumed, before the Ramban came to the scene, that that exactly is the machlokes that we're learning about here. Meaning, when we want to know whether an Eid Echad is subject to a Chiyuv Shavuos Karban because his Eidus is considered Eidus Mammon, or whether we should say, no, that's only a Gorem Mammon, that machlokes is identical to the original machlokes in the Zikin. Therefore, we would have assumed that according to Rabbi Hanina, whose Shita, I should say, is identified with that of the Chachamim, that Dovar Agorim Lamamon Lav Kimamon Dami, would therefore claim that if you destroyed my animal of Hegdesh after I was Magdish it, then you're Potter, because Dovar Agorim Lamamon Lav Kimamon Dami. On the other hand, we would have assumed that Shmuel, whose Shita is identified with Rabbi Elazar, would say Dovar Agorim Lamamon Kimamon Dami, therefore if you or your animal destroyed my famous Hegdesh, you have to pay me for that because it's Dovar Agorim Lamamon. Says the Ramban, that's not so. So let's read it inside. He says, Af, despite the fact Shagmar Mishtamesh is Beloshon Dovar Agorim Lamamon, Kosvar Ramban, She'ein Nidon Zeh, our sugi here is not shayach l'machlokes Rabbi Shimon v'chachomim liel in mazik dover agom l'mom in chayav o'potter. Kevin shekan hanidon hu l'gabi shvuas ha'edus shechiva Torah es ha'ed ha'kofer b'edus, on the condition that that edus yecholo l'havi lidei chiyuv mamon, v'af chachomim ha'sovrim sham sh'amazik potter, even though the chachomim of Rabbi Elazar there argue that the mazik doesn't have to pay to replace the English because Dovra Gomel Mom and Lav Kamom Domi, Yecholim, they're free to accept the position kan sha'ed chayav karban shvuah, that the aid in truth will have to bring a karban shvuah. Came on sha'ein zu kfiras dvarim bilvad el kfiras edus sheyicholo l'chayav mama. And I think, again, you're the jury, you can reject what I say, but I think what the Ramban is saying is that our issue here, as far as Karban Shvuah, is not the same as the issue there, because our issue here is whether or not the testimony here could be relevant to Mammon, and therefore it's considered a testimony that's included in the Parsha of Kfiras Edus. In other words, we can be open-minded to assume that in a broader definition of Kfiras Edus, even the theoretical possibility that through this Edus the Tovea would have been able to reclaim his money, that itself makes the Edus into Edus Mama. That's not the subject of the Sugya Liel back on Tzariches. There the question is there Bailus, is there ownership on this object? The object is Hegdesh. Can Dovra Goyim LeMamon create ownership? The Chachamim are not willing to say that something which he was Magdish and now belongs to Hegdesh, it's what we call Mamon Hegdesh or Mamon Hegdesh Bekinyano, that could be Machayev Tashlume Nezikin on behalf of the original Magdish simply because he's going to have to run around and replace that object once it's destroyed. No, that doesn't give him Bailus. So the Ramban is saying that although the Gemara utilizes the terminology of Dovra Gorim LeMamon to clarify our machlokes as far as Shavuos Eidus is concerned, but it's not to be equated or identified with the language in its classical form of Dovra Gorim LeMamon, which is an issue of bailus of ownership. The Machayev of Nezikin on the part of the Mazik to pay the Nizak is bailus of the Nizak. And the Chachom are unwilling to recognize that bailus. He doesn't own that behemoth, that cheftza, because it belongs to Hegdesh. You want to know what's the definition of kfiras edus? You know, can we take a broader definition or should we take a more narrow definition? The Chachomim are free to accept the position that's a broader definition. And then the Rashba, standing on the shoulders of the Ramban, takes it one step further. And he says that Le'idach Gisa, you can flip it around, Yitochet, it's possible that Rabbi Shimon, Hamachayev Sham, Rabbi Shimon, who says that this animal, even after it was designated for Hegdesh, nevertheless still belongs to the owner of the animal because, you know, it's worth to him whatever it's worth. That's called Dovra Gorim LeMamon. He may be free to say that in this case, the Eid Echad is not Chayav Shavuos Karbon because the Eidus per se in its very essence is not enough to be Mechayav Mamon. It's only Eidus as far as Shavuos is concerned. So basically, if you take the Ramban and the Rashba together, they're coming Lafuke, they're telling us, don't think that the Gemara meant to make an absolute analogy between the two. So that I thought was very, very fascinating. Now I just want to add one point here to prove my thesis that the issue back in its original form of Nezikin is an issue of bailus. The Gemara says in the second perek of, no, it's in the first perek of Psachim, that Dovra Gorim LeMamon, whether or not it's Mechayev you in Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotzeh, in the case of Chametz, the case was over there where the Bnei Mechuza were compelled to watch Chametz on behalf of the Chayalim, of the non-Jewish battalions that used to stay in the various villages, you know, when they weren't out in the battlefield, and it was a tax that was imposed by the government on the communities that they would have to offer food and supplies for the chayalim. You know, the chayalim were not expected, you know, for long periods of time to carry around with them. Today we have, you know, manot krav. I spent about 2 weeks in the army packing manot krav. I mean, they couldn't do anything more intelligent with me. Okay, fine. So I could tell you all about different squeeze containers of riba and whatever else we put in there. It was near Pesach, so we put matzah in there. course, they were only pshutas, but all right, fine. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth whether or not the Jews could be part of this. Because if the Jews are part of it, even if that chametz, the bread that they're offering the soldiers, is technically not theirs, but it's a gorem lemamon. Why? Because the government was taxing them, and if they didn't offer these breads, you know, to put the breads on the table on behalf of the chayalim, they would have to pay out of pocket for that. So that's called a davar gorem lemamon. And the Gemara wants to know, are you in violation of ownership of chametz? And the Gemara says, according to Reb Shimon, according to Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon, since davar gorem lemamon kimamon dami, there's a serious problem of chametz bePesach. I'm just using that Gemara as an indicator that the issue really boils down to ownership. Here in our sugya, that's what I think the Ramban and the Rashi, there's a different issue entirely. The issue is, how do we define this edus? When you have edus which is not sufficient in and of itself to force the nitba to pay for, you know, for the tvias atoveh, but it might cause a grama, is that called an edus mamon? Meaning, how does the Torah define edus mamon as far as a chiyuv karban shvuas edus? Is it an edus mamon which is edus that's machayev mamon? Or is it edus that's relevant to mamon in the broader sense? If you notice, the Ramban says it's not just shvuas diburim bialma. You know, it's more than diburim bialma. It's what? It's mamon. Now I want to show you the next footnote, which I thought was equally fascinating, and that's number Chaf. He says the following. Hosif Rashi, okay, maybe we'll get a chance to go through the Rashi carefully, but he says, Ti'af bi'ofen ha-shlishi she-hikera eid be'aveda u'be-motza mikol makom ein ze eila edus ha-goremes limamon. And this is what I suggested to you before, and this is where I got it from, but I forgot it was in the footnote, that there's a machlokus between Rab and Rav Yosef and Perek HaKones as to whether or not the responsibility of the motzi, the one who found the Aveda, he's what's called the Shomer Aveda, is the equivalent to the responsibility of a Shomer Chinam because he's not being paid for it, or a Shomer Sacher because the Torah is paying for it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is paying for it, whatever it is. But everybody agrees that the Shomer Aveda is not a Shoel. He's not allowed to use the object, can't benefit from it, and therefore he's not Chayv and Onsim. Only a Shoel is Chayv and Onsim. So therefore Rashi says that nobody is going to tell you that in the third case, where the Edus per se of the aid was absolutely complete, and he told you all the details that you needed to know, that everybody would agree that in such a case the aid has to bring a carbon. Absolutely not. All the aid is doing for us is identifying the person who found your object, Mr. Tovea. But nevertheless, that doesn't guarantee that the Tovea will be able to collect this mamon. Why? Because all the finder has to say is just one word, nenas, and then he's potter. Again, he has to take a shvuah to that effect, but every shomer has to take a shvuah. So this too comes under the question of goreim lemamon, meaning the single aid is a goreim lemamon, because he may or may not be able to qualify, I'm sorry, to guarantee, let's use that word, that the tovea will be able to collect his mamon. And the chiddush here of Rashi would be that even if there were two aidim who testified to the effect that this guy found your cow and I saw it in his corral, even in such a case, I don't know if they'd be chayav shvuas karban. Because the nature of the edus against the motzi aveda is such that it's very iffy. Maybe the tovea will win the case against him and retrieve his animal. Maybe he'll lose the case because the motzi aveda will take a shvuah and say nenas. Now on this Rashi, we have a Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. And Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz says, Lefi Perusho, according to Rashi, Afim yesh shnei edim al aveda v'nishba u, in plural. These two edim took a shvua, she'enam yodim edus, they don't know anything about the finder, and so forth and so on. Kevon shadayin yochal hamotzi liton shenemza, is therefore that too would come under the same same concept of Dovra Gorem Lemamon. And in Cain, Edim Hayodim Edus Al Pikadon. So, for example, if I'm claiming that you're holding on to an object which I deposited in your, you know, I commissioned you to be my executor, you know, you're my shomer, and you deny it, now I have two Edim who can testify in this Pikadon that you're holding on to my Pikadon. Now these two Edim deny this Edus and they take a Shvuah, is Yifteru Mikarban Shvuah. Why? Because the Shomer might claim Nenas. And even if he's a Shoel, he can claim Mesa Machmas Malach. Meaning, there's no guarantee that even after the Edim testify in this Pikado that it belongs to Ruvain, and Shimon is holding on to Ruvain's Pikado, that at the end of the day, Ruvain will be able to retrieve his Pikado back, because the Shomer could always come up with a claim, a Tainus Ptur. And therefore, Mikoach Zed Nokat Rabbeinu Peretz, She'etzem Edus Zu Nechsheves Edus Hamchayeves Momon. Why? Kevon She'im Lo Yiton Amotzi She'nensa Ha'avedo Yischayev L'shalem. He says that there's a fundamental difference between Ben Azai's discussion and the case of two Edim who testify in a Pikadon. We're not going to assume that the Shomer would come up with this claim of Nenas. We're going to assume that he is going to pay for it. Aye, Ben Azai says, according to one Deya, right, that's Rav Chanina, that you're part in the case of Hikar Ba Ubim Motza. That's because it's one aid, and it's one aid. Ein ha aid ba el lechayv shvua. That's not called edus mamon. Omnam kishehike rak ba obim motza nitan lomar sheyeshnei edim. If let's say the knowledge was incomplete, then even if there were two edim, we would still say perhaps that's not called edus libira dover. They can't clarify it, and there's no shvuas kar. Amar Rav Sheshes. Okay, now we start a new sugya. Hakofer bipikadon. A man denies that he ever received this object from the mafkid, and Edim come now and testify that he is holding on to the pikadon of the mafkid. Nase olav gazlon v'chayav ba'onsim. Rav Sheshes, in a very breakthrough move here, is redefining, or shall we say, expanding the definition of a gazlon. Our definition of a gazlon is someone who goes into your house, takes your cow, and steals it. Here, he didn't steal it. What happened was the object, the animal, was given over to him as what? As a pikadon. And now he denies that truth, and he lies and he says, you know what, that object is mine and it doesn't belong to you. Says Rav Sheshes, because of that lie, in other words, that kfira in Bezdin, that itself gives him the status of a gazlan. Now, you might ask me, what's the difference? Who cares? If we have two Edim that testify that he, this Shomer, actually received this object, and it belongs to the Mafkid, then he has to pay for it. So what difference does it make whether you call him a gazlan or just call him a no-good liar? And the answer is, Chayav Ba'onsim. That if the animal died, as we said before, because he was hit by a bolt of lightning, or he died of old age, then insofar as he is a shomer, b'torah shomer, he would not be chayav for such an onus. But now that he's changed his status from that of a shomer to that of a gazlan, according to Rav Sheshes, now he's going to be chayav to pay the mafkid the full value of the object, because he is a gazlan, and a gazlan is chayev to pay onsim. Let's take Rav Sheshes one step further. We know that a gazlan is posel yedus. So what happens if this Shomer, let's call him Shimon, right? Shimon denied Reuven's claim, and he says, I never got a cow from you. And then subsequent to that, on the day after, he gave Amos. He gave testimony on a different case. On the third day, we have Adim that he was holding on to Reuven's Pikadon, and he lied. Which, according to Rav Sheshes, that lie, that kfira, makes him into a Gazlan. It's stuck then, let's say if that happened on Sunday, then the Eidus that he gave on Monday, in another case, could have been even a capital case, is possible because a Gazlan is possibly Eidus. So I was thinking out loud that this is really a sugya in Perek HaChovel, which is called a Zomem L'mafreya Hu Nifsal or a Zomem Mikanu L'Avu Nifsal. Does anybody know who are the guys that fight that out? The only reason I remember this is because of Yal Kagam. Abaye and Rava. And that's one of the six cases in Shas where the Gemara says we pass in like Abaye against Rava. That ain't Zomim L'mafreyahu Nifsa. So that even though that Zomah process takes place on Tuesday, and the Eidus that these Eidim gave was on Monday, since they became Eid Zomim on the Eidus they gave on Sunday, even the Eidus on Monday is possible, because L'mafreyahu Nifsal, he becomes possible from the time that he perjured himself from the court of law, according to Abaye, namely from the time of Sunday. What do you say?
Eid Zomim is a chiddush in general, so I don't know that you can necessarily extrapolate from the...
No, but Eid Zomim chiddushu is Ravashita, we don't pass like Rava. No, Abaye says, despite the chiddush, we go L'mafreyah. Rav is the one who says, Mikado l'habahu Nifsal, because Eid Zomim chiddushu. Vein l'chabo mishas chiddushu veil. But I'm just pointing out that since we pass like Abaye, that could be relevant to Rav Sheshes' discussion over here. Because if he became a Gazlan at the moment of the Kfira, then any subsequent Eidus that he testifies on is completely null and void. Again, Rava would say that Lekuchah, say the Lekuchahs, whatever, but we pass like Abaye. Then I was thinking another thing. What happens if this individual who denied the Pikadon, and then we found out with Adam that he lied, would now want to take a Shavua in another case. Meaning somebody sued him for money, and he brought an aid, or he was Moldu Mikzas, etc., etc. Would we be able to believe his Shavua? The halacha is that a Gazlan is not only possible a Shavua, I'm sorry, he's not only possible Adam's, but he's also possible a Shavua.
So can I get on Shavua?
Okay, possibly, but I'm just pointing out that when it says Echai Beonzim, I would add the word etc. here, Vagomer. There are a whole bunch of Nafkaminas. I don't know why, I'm not sure why Rav Sheshes chose, you know, to focus on this particular Nafkamina, but there are a bunch of Nafkaminas, because when you call someone and classify him as a Gazlan, you know, that has repercussions straight across the board, whether it's in Hilchus Eidus, in Hilchus Shvua. Now again, the chiddush here is that where's the gzela? He never actually stole anything. Again, he's a no good bum, and he's a liar, and he deserves to be tarred and feathered. But where is the gzela over here, Mitch?
No, I was just wondering that, you know, we learned the cases about Gazlan making shvuas, denying chomesh and stuff like that. But if he's already a Gazlan, how is he making all these shvuas?
Well, no, that's because we didn't get the evidence yet. Again, you know, there are always three time periods. So there's the time period where he received the pikaron, and then there's the time period where he denied the pikaron, and then there's the time period where he took a shvur. So it's true that eventually we're going to find out that he was lying, but in the meantime, if he took a shvur, then he's chayav a karen v'chomesh and a korban asham. Our case is where he did not take the shvur. Again, if he takes the shvur that I don't have your pikadon, then kuli alvalo please chayav ba'onsim, he's a gazlan. Rav Sheshes' chiddush is that even though he didn't take the shvua, but Adam came in to testify that he indeed lied, and he is holding on to so-and-so's pikadon, he becomes a gazlan, and he's chayav ba'onsim, etc., etc., even in the absence of a shvuah. If he takes a shvuah, I don't need Rav Sheshes for that. That's already a parsha in the Torah that the Torah says, v'kicheish v'amito, and v'nishba l'sheker, then he's got to pay korban, he's got to pay keren, he's got to pay chomesh, he's got to bring a korban asham, That's straight out of the books, the folios of the Pentateuch. I don't need Rav Sheshes for that. The chiddush of Rav Sheshes is that if you want to be mechayev him a karban asham, or you want to be mechayev him chomesh, for that you need a shvuah. But if you want to be mechayev him for onsim, and you want to define him and classify as a gazlan, for that I don't even need the shvuah. All I need is for Adam to come in and testify that he lied. Now, where did he tell this lie? Was it in someone's backyard, in the kitchen, you know, in the dining room? Where did it take place? So if you take a look at the bottom of the page that I gave you, on the right side, in footnote number Chaf Aleph, and you look three lines up from the bottom of the page, HaRambam v'me'iri kosu shedin zeh nemar rak kishekofar bebezdin v'lo kishekofar chutz lebezdin. Now, Rabosai, he goes on and quotes from Rabbi Simcha Midvinsk. I don't understand the whole chiddush of Rabbi Simcha Midvinsk. Doesn't sit well with me. You know, again, I'm a big fan of the Or Sameach. He makes me happy. It's really the light of the day for me. But in this case, I don't know why the Or Sameach has to come up with a very complex, convoluted explanation of this Rambam and the Meiri. Forget about all that. It's simple to me. You want to make him into a gazlan, there's got to be some sort of kfira that has halachic legal teeth to it. I would call it, again, just for a couple of people here who know what I'm talking about, a chaloshem kfira. You know, what he does outside of Bezdin, that's irrelevant. He can come into Bezdin tomorrow and admit the truth. He never lied. Again, he's a no good liar for saying it outside of Bezdin. I'm not going to give him shishi. But he's not a kofir, which gives him the status of a gazlan. That has to take place in Bezdin. So I don't know. If you like, you can go through the Or Sameach as it's quoted here in this footnote. I don't see why he's compelled to go through this. But at the beginning of this footnote, number Chaf Aleph, he says something very, very interesting. He says, "The al afsha ein toein tanas ganov nase ganov ella im nishba." Interesting. There's halach, if you recall, of toein tanas ganov bepikonon, that if, let's say, a shomer chinam claims in Bezdin against the mafkid that the object was stolen, he becomes a ganov, and he's going to have to pay kefal. That's called toin tanis ganov v'pikod. In such a case, there's a condition that there has to be a shvua. Here, Rav Sheshes says there's no condition of a shvua. I guess time flies when you're having fun. I didn't even realize we were halfway through. Okay, we'll stop for a minute. I want to wish everyone a great Shabbat and a great Tu B'Shvat. And if anyone's around on Friday night, we live on Rabbi Meir, number 3, Knisa Bet, and we're having a big hullabaloo there. You get all the fruits that totally come out of your gazoo. And we're having an Onik Shabbat. We don't charge anything. There'll be wine there if you drink wine. And that'll start at 8:45 tomorrow night. Rabbi Meir 3, Knisa Bet. Just go up one flight. Yeah. I'll leave a light on. 8:45 officially. Come with you.
So I have to figure it out.
Yeah.
So how late do you think the rush is? I still.
My guess is close to midnight. But it all depends on who shows up. And I have no way scientifically of guessing who's going to show up.